would have had his Sangreal and launched himself at Randall Thor long since. No doubt there are some in Cairhien or Roydian, but even if you do not walk right into Al-Thor, both are full of women who can channel. Ignorant girls, Grendahl sniffed. If a kitchen girl puts a knife in your back, Semirag said coolly, are you less dead than if you fall in a Shadje jewel at Kaal? Massana nodded. That leaves whatever might lie buried in ancient ruins or forgotten in an attic. If you want to count on finding something by chance, do so. I will not, unless someone knows the location of a stasis box. There was a certain dryness to that last. The stasis boxes should have survived the breaking of the world, but that upheaval had likely as not left them on the bottom of an ocean or buried beneath mountains. Little remained of the world they had known beyond a few names and legends. Grendahl's smile was all sweetness. I always thought you should be a teacher. Oh, I am sorry, I forgot. Messana's face darkened. Her road to the great lord began when she was denied a place in the column Don all those years ago. Unsuited for research, they had told her, but she could still teach. Well, she had taught until she found how to teach them all. I am still waiting to hear what the great lord said, Semirag murmured. Yes, are we to kill Al-Thor? Messana realized she was gripping her skirt with both hands and let go. Strange. She never let anyone get under her skin. If all goes well in 2 months, 3 at most, he will be where I can safely reach him, and helpless. Where can you safely reach him? Grendahl arched an eyebrow quizzically. Where have you made your lair? No matter. Bare as it is, it's as good a plan as I've heard lately. Still, Demondred kept silent, stood there studying them. No, not Grendahl. Semirag and her. And when he did speak, half to himself, it was to they too. When I think where you two have placed yourselves, I wonder. How much has the great lord known? For how long? How much of what has happened has been at his design all along? There was no answer to that. Finally, he said, you want to know what the great lord told me? Very well. But it stays here, held close. Since Samael chose to stay away, he learns nothing. Nor do the others, whether alive or dead. The first part of the great lord's message was simple. Let the lord of chaos rule. His words, exact. The corners of his mouth twitched, as close to a smile as Messana had ever seen from him. Then he told them the rest. Messana found herself shivering, and did not know whether she did so from excitement or fear. It could work. It could hand them everything. But it required luck, and gambling made her uncomfortable. Demondred was the gambler. He was right about one thing. Luz Theron had made his own luck as a mint made coin. In her opinion, it seemed that so far Randall Thor did the same. Unless the great lord had a plan beyond the one he had revealed. And that frightened her more than any other possibility.
The gilt-framed mirror reflected the room, the disturbingly patterned mosaics on the walls, the gilded furnishings and fine carpets, the other mirrors and the tapestries. A palace room without a window or a door. The mirror reflected a woman striding up and down in a dark blood-red gown, her beautiful face a combination of rage and disbelief. Still disbelief. It reflected his own face, too, and that interested him far more than the woman. He could not resist touching his nose and mouth and cheeks for the 100th time to make sure they were real. Not young, but younger than the face he had worn on first waking from the long sleep with all its endless nightmares. An ordinary face, and he had always hated being ordinary. He recognized the sound in his throat as a budding laugh, a giggle, and stifled it. He was not mad. Despite everything, he was not that. A name had been given to him during this second, far more horrific sleep, before he woke to this face and body. Osangar. A name given by a voice he knew and dared not disobey. His old name, given in scorn and adopted in pride, was gone forever. The voice of his master had spoken and made it so. The woman was Arangar. Who she had been was no more. Interesting choices, those names, Osangar and Arangar. With a left and right hand daggers in a form of dueling briefly popular early in that long building, from the day the boar had been made to the actual beginning of the War of Power. His memories were spotty, too much had been lost in the long sleep and the short, but he remembered that. The popularity had been brief because almost inevitably both duelists died. The dagger's blades were coated with slow poison. Something blurred in the mirror, and he turned, not too quickly. He had to remember who he was and make sure others remembered. There still was no door, but a murderall shared the room with them. Neither thing was strange in this place, but the murderall stood taller than any Osangar had seen before. He took his time, letting the half-man wait to be acknowledged, and before he could open his mouth, Arangar spat. "Why has this been done to me? Why have I been put into this body? Why?" The last was almost a shriek. Osangar would have thought the murderall's bloodless lips twitched in a smile, except that was impossible, here or anywhere. Even Trollocs had a sense of humor, if a vile and violent one, but not murderall.
"You were both given the best that could be taken in the borderlands."
Its voice was a viper rustling in dry grass.
"It is a fine body, strong and healthy, and better than the alternative."
Both things were true. It was a fine body, suitable for a Dian dancer in the old days, sleekly lush, with a green-eyed ivory opal of a face to match, framed by glossy black hair. And anything bettered the alternative. Perhaps Arangar did not see it that way. Rage mottled that beautiful face. She was going to do something reckless. Osangar knew it. There had always been a problem in that regard. Lanfear seemed cautious by contrast. He reached for Saidin. Channeling here could be dangerous, but less than allowing her to do something truly stupid. He reached for Saidin and found nothing. He had not been shielded. He would have felt it, and known how to work around or break it, given time, if it was not too strong. This was as if he had been severed. Shock petrified him where he stood. Not so for Arangar. Perhaps she had made the same discovery, but it affected her differently. With a shriek like a cat, she launched herself at the murderall, fingernails clawed. A futile attack, of course. The murderall did not even shift its stance. Casually, it caught her by the throat, raised her straight-armed till her feet left the floor. The screech became a gurgle, and she grabbed the half-man's wrist with both hands. With her dangling in its grasp, it turned that eyeless stare to Osangar.
"You have not been severed, but you will not channel until you are told you may. And you will never strike at me. I am Shai-Daharan."
Osangar tried to swallow, but his mouth was dust. Surely the creature had nothing to do with whatever had been done to him. Murderall had powers of a sort, but not that. Yet it knew. He had never liked half-men. He had helped make the Trollocs, blending human and animal stock. He was proud of that, of the skill involved, the difficulty. But these occasional throwback offspring made him uneasy at the best of times. Shai-Daharan turned its attention back to the woman twitching in its fist. Her face was beginning to go purple, and her feet kicked feebly.
"You will adapt. The body bends to the soul, but the mind bends to the body. You are adapting already. Soon it will be as if you had never had any other. Or you may refuse. Then another will take your place, and you will be given to my brothers, blocked as you are.
Those thin lips twitched again.
They miss their sport in the borderlands.
She cannot speak, Osengar said. You're killing her. Don't you know who we are? Put her down, half-man. Obey me.
The thing had to obey one of the chosen, but the Murdral impassively studied Arangar's darkening face for a long moment more before letting her feet touch the carpet and loosening its grip.
I obey the Great Lord. No other.
She hung on, wavering, coughing and gulping air. Had it taken its hand away, she would have fallen.
Will you submit to the will of the Great Lord?
Not a demand, just a perfunctory question in that rasping voice.
I will,
she managed hoarsely, and Shaidar Haran let her go. She swayed, massaging her throat, and Osengar moved to help her, but she threatened him with a glare and a fist before he touched her. He backed away with raised hands. That was one enmity he did not need. But it was a fine body, and a fine joke. He had always prided himself on his sense of humor, but this was rich.
"Do you not feel gratitude?" the Murdral said. "You were dead and are alive. Think of Ravin, whose soul is beyond saving, beyond time. You have a chance to serve the Great Lord again and absolve yourselves of your errors."
Osengar hastened to assure it that he was grateful, that he wanted nothing more than to serve and gain absolution. Ravin dead? What had happened? No matter. One fewer of the chosen meant one more chance for true power when the Great Lord was free. It abraded, humbling himself before something that could be said to be as much his creation as the Trollocs, but he remembered death too clearly. He would grovel before a worm to avoid that again. Arangar was no less quick, he noted, for all the anger in her eyes. Clearly she remembered, too.
"Then it is time for you to go into the world once more in the service of the Great Lord,"
Shaidar Haran said.
"None but I and the Great Lord know you live. If you succeed, you will live forever and be raised above all others. If you fail—" But you will not fail, will you?"
The half-man did smile then. It was like seeing death smile. Chapter 1. Lion on the Hill. The wheel of time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. In one age, called the Third Age by some, an age yet to come, an age long past, a wind rose among brown-thicketed hills in Kyrian. The wind was not the beginning. There are neither beginnings nor endings to the turning of the wheel of time. But it was a beginning. Westward the wind blew over abandoned villages and farms, many only jumbles of charred timber. War had racked Kyrian, war and civil war, invasion and chaos, and even now that it was done, insofar as it was done, only a handful began to trickle back to their homes. The wind held no moisture, and the sun tried to sear away what little remained in the land. Where the small town of Meyrone faced larger Arangil, across the river Erenin, the wind crossed into Andor. Both towns baked, and if more prayers for rain rose in Arangil were refugees from Kyrian jammed inside the walls like fish in a cask, even the soldiers packed around Meyrone offered up words to the Creator, sometimes drunkenly, sometimes fervently. Winter should have been beginning to send out tendrils, the first snows long past, and those who sweated feared the reason it was not so, though few dared voice those fears. Westward the wind blew, stirring drought-shriveled leaves on the trees, riffling the surface of shrinking streams bordered in hard-baked mud. There were no burned-out ruins in Andor, but villagers eyed the swollen sun nervously, and farmers tried not to look at fields that had produced no fall crops. Westward, until the wind passed across Camelin, lifting two banners above the royal palace in the heart of the Ogier-built inner city. One banner floated red as blood, upon it a disk divided by a sinuous line, half white, half black, as deep as the white was brilliant. The other banner slashed snow-white across the sky. The figure on it, like some strange golden-maned four-legged serpent, sun-eyed and scaled scarlet and gold, seemed to ride on the wind. It was a close question which of the two caused more fear. Sometimes the same breast that held fear held hope. Hope of salvation and fear of destruction, from the same source. Many said Camelin was the second most beautiful city in the world, and not only Andorans, who often named it first, overranking Tarvalin itself. Tall round towers marched along the great outer wall of gray stone, streaked silver and white, and within rose even taller towers, and domes of white and gold gleaming in the pitiless sun. The city climbed over hills to its center, the ancient inner city, encircled by its own shining white wall, containing its own towers and domes, purple and white and gold, and glittering tile mosaics that looked down on the new city, well under 2,000 years old. As the inner city was the heart of Camelin, and more than merely by being its center, the royal palace was the heart of the inner city, a gleeman's tale of snowy spires and golden domes and stonework like lace, a heart that beat in the shadow of those two banners. Stripped to the waist, and balanced easily on the balls of his feet, at the moment Rand was no more aware that he was in a white-tiled courtyard of the palace than he was of the onlookers among the surrounding colonnades. Sweat slicked his hair to his skull, rolled down his chest. The half-healed round scar on his side ached fiercely, but he refused to acknowledge it. Figures like that on the white banner overhead twined around his forearms, glittering metallically red and gold. Dragons, the Aiel called them, and others were taking up the name. He was dimly aware of the heron, branded neatly into each of his palms, but only because he could feel them against the long hilt of his wooden practice sword. He was one with the sword, flowing from stance to stance without thought, boots scraping softly on the pale tiles. Lion on the hill became arc of the moon, became tower of morning, without thought. Five sweating, bare-chested men circled him, sidestepping warily from stance to stance, practice swords shifting. They were all he was really aware of. Hard-faced and confident, they were the best he had found so far. The best since Lan went. Without thought, as Lan had taught him. He was one with the sword, one with the five men. Abruptly he ran forward, the encircling men moving rapidly to keep him centered. Just at the moment when that balance teetered on breaking, when at least two of the five had begun to shift toward breaking it, he suddenly turned in mid-step and was running the other way. They tried to react, but it was too late. With a loud clack, he caught the downstroke of a practice sword on his own blade of bundled laths. Simultaneously, his right foot took the grizzle-haired man next over in the belly. Grunting, the man bent double. Locked blade to blade, Rand forced his broken-nosed opponent to turn, kicking the doubled-over man again as they went around. Grizzlehair went down, gasping for air. Rand's opponent tried to back away to use his blade, but that freed Rand's blade to spiral around his, the grapevine twines, and thrust hard against his chest, hard enough to knock him off his feet. Only heartbeats had passed, few enough that just now were the other three closing in. The first, a quick, squat little man, belied his stature by leaping over Broken Nose with a yell as Broken Nose toppled. Rand's practice blade took him across the shins, half upending him, then again across the back, driving him down to the paving stones. That left only two, but they were the two best. A limber pull of a man whose sword moved like a serpent's tongue, and a heavy, shaven-headed fellow who never made a mistake. They separated immediately to come at Rand from two sides, but he did not wait. Quickly he closed with the skinny man. He had only moments before the other rounded the fallen. The skinny man was good as well as fast. Rand offered gold for the best, and they came. He was tall for an Andoran, though Rand overtopped him by a hand. Yet height had little bearing with the sword. Sometimes strength did. Rand went at him in an all-out attack. The man's long face tightened as he gave ground. The boar rushes down the mountain, crashed through parting the silk, broke lightning of three prongs, and the bundled laths slashed hard against the side of the man's neck. He fell with a strangled grunt. Immediately Rand threw himself down and to the right, rolling up to his knees on the paving stones, blade streaking into the river undercuts the bank. The shaven-headed man was not fast, but somehow he had anticipated. Even as Rand's lath blade swept across the fellow's wide middle, the man's own blade cracked down on Rand's head. For a moment, Rand wavered, his vision a blur of black flecks. Shaking his head in an effort to clear his eyes, he used the practice sword to push himself to his feet. Panting hard, the shaven-headed man watched him cautiously.
"Pay him,"
Rand said, and wariness left the shaven-headed man's face. Needless wariness. As if Rand had not promised an extra day's coin to any man who managed to strike him. Triple to any who defeated him 1-1. It was a way to make sure nobody held back to flatter the dragon reborn. He never asked their names, and if they took the omission amiss, so much the better if it made them try harder. He wanted opponents to test him, not become friends. The friends he did have would curse the hour they met him one day, if they did not already. The others were stirring, too. A man killed was to stay where he lay until it was all done, an obstruction as a real corpse would be. But the squat man was having to help Grizzlehair up, and having trouble standing unaided himself. The limber fellow worked his head around, wincing. There would be no more practice today.
"Pay them all!"
A ripple of clapping and praise ran through the watchers among the narrow fluted columns, lords and ladies in colorful silks, heavy with elaborate embroidery and braid. Rand grimaced and tossed his sword aside. That lot had all been toad-eaters to Lord Gabriel when Queen Morghese, their queen, was little more than a prisoner in this palace. Her palace. But Rand needed them, for the moment. "Clutch the bramble, and you will be pricked," he thought. At least he hoped it was his thought. Sulin, the wiry, white-haired leader of Rand's escort of Aiel Maidens of the Spear, leader of the maidens this side of the spine of the world, pulled a gold Tarvalin mark from her belt pouch, tossed it with a grimace that drew at the nasty scar on the side of her face. The maidens did not like Rand handling a sword, even a practice blade. They did not approve of any sword. No Aiel did. The shaven-headed man caught the coin and answered Sulin's blue-eyed stare with a careful bow. Everyone was careful around the maidens, in their coats and breeches and soft, laced boots of browns and grays made to fade into the bleak landscape of the waste. Some had begun adding shades of green to suit what they called the wetlands, despite the drought. Compared to the Aiel waste, it was still wet. Few Aiel had seen water they could not step across before leaving the waste, and bitter feuds had been fought over pools 2 or 3 paces wide. Like any Aiel warrior, like the 20 other light-haired maidens around the courtyard, Sulin kept her hair cut short except for a tail on the nape of her neck. She carried 3 short spears and a round bullhide buckler in her left hand and a pointed, heavy-bladed knife at her belt. Like any Aiel warrior, down to those the age of Jelani, all of 16, with traces of baby fat still on her cheeks, Sulin knew how to use those weapons well, and would on slight provocation, at least as folk this side of the Dragon Wall saw it. Except for her, the maidens watched everyone, every piercework-screened window and pale stone balcony, every shadow. Some had short curved bows of horn with arrows knocked, and more shafts ready in bristling quivers worn at the waist. Fardarai's Mai, the maidens of the spear carried the honor of their prophesied Karakarn, if sometimes in their own peculiar way, and not a one of them but would die to keep Rand alive. The thought made his stomach boil in its own acid. Sulin continued, tossing the gold with a sneer. It pleased Rand to use Tarvalin coins for this debt. Another for Shavenhead, one for each of the others. Aiel approved of most wetlanders little more than of swords, and that took in anyone not born and bred Aiel. For most Aiel, that would have included Rand, despite his Aiel blood. But there were the dragons on his arms. One marked a clan chief, earned by risking life on strength of will. Two marked the Karakarn, the chief of chiefs, he who comes with the dawn. And the maidens had other reasons for approval. Gathering up practice swords, shirts, and coats, the men bowed their way from his presence. "Tomorrow," Rand called after them. "Early." Deeper bows acknowledged the order. Before the bare-chested men were gone from the courtyard, the Andron nobles swept out of the colonnades, a rainbow of silks crowding around Rand, dabbing at sweaty faces with lace-trimmed handkerchiefs. They made Rand's bile rise. "Use what you must use, or let the shadow cover the land." Moraine had told him that. He almost preferred the honest opposition of the Kyrianen and Tyrens to this lot. That nearly made him laugh, calling what those did honest. "You were wonderful," Aramilla breathed, lightly laying a hand on his arm. "So quick, so strong." Her big brown eyes seemed even more melting than usual. She was apparently fool enough to think him susceptible. Her green gown, covered with vines in silver, was cut low by Andoran standards, which meant it showed a hint of cleavage. She was pretty, but easily old enough to be his mother. None of them was any younger, and some older, but all competed at licking Rand's boots.
"That was magnificent, my lord dragon," Elenia nearly elbowed Aramilla aside.
That smile looked odd on the honey-haired woman's vulpine face. She had the reputation of a termagant. Not around Rand, of course.
"There has never been a swordsman like you in the history of Andor. Even Surin Maravale, who was Otto Hawkwing's greatest general and husband to Ishara, first to sit in the Lion Throne, even he died when confronted by only 4 swordsmen. Assassins, in the 23rd year of the War of the 100 Years, though he did kill all 4.
Elenia seldom missed a chance to point out her knowledge of Andor's history, especially in areas where not much was known, like the war that had broken Hawkwing's empire apart after his death. At least today she did not add justifications of her claims to the Lion Throne.
"Just a bit of bad luck at the end," Elenia's husband Jared put in jovially.
He was a square man, dark for an Andoran. Embroidered scrollwork and golden boars, the sign of House Sarend, covered the cuffs and long collars of his red coat, and the white lions of Andor, the long sleeves and high neck of Elenia's matching red gown. Rand wondered whether she thought he would not recognize the lions for what they were. Jared was high seat of his house, but all the drive and ambition came from her.
"Marvelously well done, my lord dragon," Karin said bluntly.
Her shimmery gray dress, cut as severely as her face, but heavy with silver braid on sleeves and hem, almost matched the streaks through her dark hair.
"You surely must be the finest swordsman in the world."
Despite her words, the blocky woman's flat-eyed look was like a hammer. Had she had brains to match her toughness, she would have been dangerous. Naon was a slim, palely beautiful woman, with big blue eyes and waves of gleaming black hair, but the sneer she directed at the 5 departing men was a fixture.
"I suspect they planned it out beforehand so one would manage to strike you. They will divide the extra coin among them."
Unlike Elenia, the blue-clad woman with the silver triple keys of House Aran climbing her long sleeves, never mentioned her own claims to the throne, not where Rand could hear. She pretended to be content as high seat of an ancient house, A lion is pretending to be content as a house cat.
"Can I always count on my enemies not to work together?" he asked quietly.
Neon's mouth worked in surprise. She was hardly stupid, yet seemed to think those who opposed her should roll onto their backs as soon as she confronted them, and seemed to take it as a personal affront when they did not. One of the maidens, Enyla, ignored the nobles to hand Rand a thick length of white toweling to wipe his sweat away. A fiery redhead, she was short for an Aiel, and it grated at her that some of these wetlander women were taller than she. The majority of the maidens could stare most of the men in the room straight in the eyes. The Andorans did their best to ignore her, too, but their pointed looks elsewhere made the attempts glaring failures. Enyla walked away as if they were invisible. The silence lasted just moments.
"My lord dragon is wise," Lord Lur said with a small bow and a slight frown.
The high seat of House Anshar was blade slender and blade strong, in a yellow coat adorned with gold braid, but too smoothly unctuous, too smooth altogether. Nothing but those occasional frowns ever soiled that surface, as if he was unaware of them. Yet he was hardly the only one to give Rand strange looks. They all looked at the dragon reborn in their midst with wondering disbelief sometimes.
"One's enemies usually do work together sooner or later. One must identify them before they have the chance to."
More praise for Rand's wisdom flowed from Lord Henryn, blocky, bald, and hard-eyed, and from gray-curled Lady Carlis, with her open face and devious mind, from plump, giggly Daerilla and thin-lipped, nervous Elagar, and nearly a dozen others who had held their tongues while those more powerful spoke. The lesser lords and ladies fell silent as soon as Elenia opened her mouth once more.
"There is always the difficulty of knowing your enemies before they make themselves known. It is often too late, then."
Her husband nodded sagely.
"I always say," Nayan announced, "that who does not support me opposes me. I've found it a good rule. Those who hang back may be waiting until your back is turned to plant a dagger."
This was hardly the first time they had tried to secure their own places by casting suspicion on any lord or lady not standing with them. But Rand wished he could stop them, short of telling them to stop. Their attempts to play the game of houses were feeble compared to the sly maneuverings of Karienin, or even Tyrans. And they were irritating besides. But there were thoughts he did not want them to have yet. Surprisingly, aid came from white-haired Lord Nason, the high seat of House Cairn.
"Another Jerome," the man said,
an obsequious smile awkward on his gaunt, narrow face. He drew exasperated looks, even from some of the minor nobles before they caught themselves. Nason had been a little addled since the events surrounding Rand's coming to Camelin. Instead of the star and sword of his house, Nason's pale blue lapels were incongruously worked with flowers, moondrops, and lover's knots, and he sometimes wore a flower in his thinning hair, like a country youth going courting. House Cairn was too powerful for even Jared or Neon to push him aside, though. Nason's head bobbed on a scrawny neck.
"Your blade work is spectacular, my lord dragon. You are another Jerome." "Why?"
The word cut across the courtyard, souring the Andorans' faces.
Davram Bashir was certainly no Andoran, with his tilted, almost black eyes, a hooked beak of a nose, and thick, gray-streaked mustaches curving down like horns around his wide mouth.
He was slender, little taller than Enyla, in a short gray coat embroidered with silver on cuffs and lapels, and baggy trousers tucked into boots turned down at the knee. Where the Andorans had stood to watch, the Marshal General of Saldaea had had a gilded chair dragged to the courtyard and sprawled in it with a leg over one of its arms. Ring-quilloned sword, twisted so the hilt, sat in easy reach. Sweat glistened on his dark face, but he paid it as little mind as he did the Andorans.
"What do you mean?" Rand demanded.
"All this sword practice," Bashir said easily. "And with five men..."
No one exercises against five. It's foolish. Sooner or later, your brains will be spilled on the ground in a melee like that, even with practice swords. And to no purpose.
Rand's jaw tightened.
Jerem once defeated 10.
Shifting in his chair, Bashir laughed.
"Do you think you'll live long enough to equal the greatest swordsman in history?"
An angry mutter came from the Andrans. Feigned anger, Rand was sure, but Bashir ignored it.
"You are who you are, after all."
Suddenly he moved like an uncoiling spring. The dagger drawn while shifting flashed toward Rand's heart. Rand did not move a muscle. Instead, he seized Zaydeen, the male half of the true source. It took no more thought than breathing. Zaydeen flooded into him, carrying the Dark One's taint, an avalanche of foul ice, a torrent of reeking molten metal. It tried to crush him, to scour him away, and he rode it like a man balancing atop a collapsing mountain. He channeled, a simple weave of air that wrapped up the dagger and stopped it an arm's length from his chest. Emptiness surrounded him. He floated in the middle of it, in the void, thought and emotion distant.
"Die!"
Jared shouted, drawing his sword as he ran toward Bashir. Lurin Henryn and Elagar and every Andron lord had his sword out, even Nason, though he looked about to drop his. The maidens had wrapped their shufa around their heads, black veils coming up to cover their faces, to blue or green eyes as they raised long-pointed spears. Aiel always veiled before killing.
"Stop!"
Rand barked, and everyone froze in their tracks, the Andrans blinking in confusion, the maidens simply poised on their toes. Bashir had not moved again, beyond settling back into the chair, his legs still hooked over the arm. Plucking the horn-hilted dagger from the air with one hand, Rand let go of the source. Even with the taint twisting his belly, the taint that eventually destroyed men who channeled, letting go was difficult. With Zaydeen in him, he saw more clearly, heard more sharply. It was a paradox he did not understand, but when he was floating in that seemingly endless void, somehow buffered against bodily feeling and emotions, every sense was magnified. Without it, he felt only half alive. And some of the taint seemed to remain behind, but not the mitigating glory of Zaydeen. The deadly glory that would kill him if he wavered an inch in the struggle with it. Turning the dagger in his hands, he walked slowly to Bashir.
"Had I been an eye blink slower," he said softly, "I'd be dead. I could kill you where you sit, and no law in Andor or anywhere else would say me wrong."
He was ready to do it, he realized. Cold rage had replaced Zaydeen. A few weeks' acquaintance did not cover this. The Saldaean's tilted eyes were as calm as if he lulled in his own home.
"My wife would not like that. Nor you, for that matter. Dira would probably take command and set out hunting Taim again. She doesn't approve of my agreement to follow you."
Rand shook his head slightly, the edge of his anger dulled a little by the man's composure. And his words. It had been a surprise to learn that among Bashir's 9,000 Saldaean horse, all of the nobles had brought their wives, and most of the other officers as well. Rand did not understand how a man could take his wife into danger, but it was traditional in Saldaea, except when campaigning into the Blight. He avoided looking at the maidens. They were warriors to their toenails, but women too, and he had promised not to keep them from danger, even death. He had made no promise not to flinch at that, though, and it ripped at him inside when he had to, but he kept his promises. He did what he had to do, even when he hated himself for it. With a sigh, he tossed the dagger aside.
"Your question," he said politely. "Why?"
"Because you are who you are," Bashir said plainly. "Because you, and those men you're gathering, I suppose, are what you are."
Rand heard feet shuffling behind him. For all they tried to, the Andorans could never hide their horror at his amnesty.
"You can do what you did with the dagger every time," Bashir went on, putting his raised boot down and leaning forward. But for any assassin to reach you, he has to get past your Aiel. And my horsemen, for that matter. Bah! If anything gets close to you, it won't be human.
Throwing his hands wide, he settled back again.
Well, if you want to practice the sword, do it. A man needs exercise and relaxation. But don't get your skull split open. Too much depends on you. And I don't see any Aes Sedai around to heal you.
His mustache almost hid his sudden grin.
Besides, if you die, I don't think our Andoran friends will maintain their warm welcome for me and my men.
The Andorans had put up their swords, but their eyes remained on Bashir malevolently. Nothing to do with how close he had come to killing Rand.
Usually they kept their faces smooth around Bashir, for all he was a foreign general with a foreign army on Andoran soil.
The Dragon Reborn wanted Bashir there, and this lot would have smiled at a murdrawl if the Dragon Reborn wanted it. But if Rand might turn on him, no need to hide anything then.
They were vultures who had been ready to feed on Morghese before she died, and they would feed on Bashir given half a chance. And on Rand. He could hardly wait to be rid of them.
The only way to live is to die. The thought came into his head suddenly. He had been told that once, in such a way he had to believe it, but the thought was not his. I must die. I deserve only death. He turned away from Bashir, clutching at his head. Bashir was out of his chair in an instant, clutching Rand's shoulder, though it was head high to him.
What is the matter? Did that blow really crack your head?
I'm fine. Rand pulled his hands down. There was never any pain in this, only the shock of having another man's thoughts in his head.
Bashir was not the only one watching. Most of the maidens were eyeing him as closely as they did the courtyard, especially Anila and yellow-haired Somara, the tallest of them. Those two would probably bring him some sort of herb tea as soon as their duties were done, and stand over him till he drank it. Elenia and Neon and the rest of the Andorans were breathing hard, clutching at coats and skirts, studying Rand, with the wide-eyed fear of people afraid they might be seeing the first signs of madness.
I'm fine, he told the courtyard.
Only the maidens relaxed, and Anila and Somara not very far. Aiel did not care about the Dragon Reborn. To them, Rand was the Kaar Karn, prophesied to unite them and to break them. They took it in stride, though they worried about it too, and they seemed to take his channeling in stride as well, and everything that might go with it. The others, the Wetlanders, he thought dryly, called him the Dragon Reborn, and never speculated on what that meant. They believed he was the rebirth of Luz Theron Telamon, the dragon, the man who had sealed the hole into the Dark One's prison and ended the War of the Shadow 3,000 years ago and more. Ended the Age of Legends as well, when the Dark One's last counterstroke tainted Saidin, and every man who could channel began to go insane, starting with Luz Theron himself and his 100 companions. They called Rand the Dragon Reborn and never suspected that some part of Luz Theron Telamon might be inside his head, as mad as the day he had begun the Time of Madness and the Breaking of the World. As mad as any of those male Aes Sedai who had changed the face of the world beyond recognition. It had come on him slowly, but the more Rand learned of the One Power, the stronger he became with Saidin. The stronger Luz Theron's voice became, and the harder Rand had to fight to keep a dead man's thoughts from taking him over. That was one reason why he liked sword practice. The absence of thought was a barrier to keep him himself.
We need to find an Aes Sedai, Bashir muttered. If those rumors are true, the light burned my eyes. I wish we had never let that one leave.
A good many people had fled Camelin in the days after Rand and the Aiel seized the city. The palace itself nearly emptied overnight. There were people Rand would have liked to have found, people who had helped him, but they had all vanished. Some still slipped away. One fleeing in those first days had been a young Aes Sedai, young enough that her face still lacked the distinctive agelessness. Bashir's men sent word when they found her at an inn, but when she found out who Rand was, she ran screaming. Literally screaming. He never even learned her name or Aja.
Rumors said another was somewhere in the city, but 100 rumors were loose in Camelin now, 1,000, each less likely than the next. Definitely unlikely any wood would lead to an Aes Sedai. Aiel patrols had spotted several passing Camelin by, each plainly going somewhere in a hurry, and none with any intention of entering a city occupied by the Dragon Reborn.
"Could I trust any Aes Sedai?" Rand asked.
"It was just a headache. My head isn't hard enough not to wake a little when it's hit." Bashir snorted hard enough to stir his thick mustaches.
"However hard your head is, sooner or later you'll have to trust Aes Sedai. Without them, you'll never bring all the nations behind you short of conquest. People look for such things. However many of the prophecies they hear you fulfilled, many will wait for the Aes Sedai to put their stamp on you."
"I won't avoid fighting anyway, and you know it," Rand said. "The White Cloaks aren't likely to welcome me into Amadicia, even if Aaron agrees. And Samael certainly won't give up Ilion without a fight."
"Samael and Ravin, and Mogedion, and..."
He harshly forced the thought from his consciousness. It was not easy. They came without warning, and it was never easy. A thump made him look over his shoulder. Aramilla lay in a heap on the paving stones. Karin was kneeling to pull her skirts down over her ankles and chafe her wrists. Elagar swayed as though he might join Aramilla in a moment, and neither Nason nor Elenia appeared in much better state. Most of the rest looked ready to sick up. Mention of the Forsaken could do that, especially since Rand had told them that Lord Gabriel really had been Ravin. He was not sure how much they believed, but just considering the possibility was enough to unhinge the knees of most. Their shock was why they were still alive. Had he believed they had served knowingly... No, he thought. If they'd known, if they were all dark friends, you'd still use them. Sometimes he was so sick of himself that he really was ready to die. At least he was telling the truth. The Aes Sedai were all trying to keep it secret, the Forsaken being free. They feared that knowing would just bring more chaos and panic. Rand was trying to spread the truth. People might panic, but they would have time to recover. The Aes Sedai way, knowledge and panic might come too late for recovery. Besides, people had a right to know what they faced.
"Ilion won't hold out long," Bashir said.
Rand's head whipped back around, but Bashir was too old a campaigner to speak of what he should not, where others could hear. He was just taking the talk away from the Forsaken. Though if the Forsaken or anything else made Davram Bashir nervous, Rand had not seen it yet.
"Ilion will crack like a nut hit by a hammer. You and Matt worked out a good plan."
The basic idea had been Rand's, but Matt and Bashir had provided the 1,000 details that would make it work. Matt more than Bashir.
"An interesting young fellow, Matt Cawthon," Bashir mused. "I look forward to speaking with him again. He never would say who he studied under. Agomar Jagad, I hear you've both been to Shinar."
Rand said nothing. Matt's secrets were his own. Rand was not really sure what they were himself. Bashir tilted his head, scratched at a mustache with one finger.
"He's young to have studied under anyone. No older than you. Did he find a library somewhere? I would like to see the books he's read."
"You'll have to ask him," Rand said. "I don't know." He supposed Matt had to have read a book sometime, somewhere, but Matt did not have much interest in books. Bashir only nodded. When Rand did not want to talk about something, Bashir usually let it alone. Usually.
"The next time you jaunt off to Carrion, why don't you bring back the green sister who's there? Egwene Sedai. I've heard the Aiel speak of her. They say she's from your home village, too. You could trust her, couldn't you?"
"Egwene has other duties," Rand laughed. "A green sister. If Bashir only knew." Samara appeared at Rand's side with his linen shirt and his coat. A fine red wool, cut in the Andoran style, with dragons in the long collar, and laurel leaves thick on the lapels and climbing the sleeves. She was tall even for an Aiel woman, maybe not quite a hand shorter than he. Like the other maidens, she had lowered her veil, but the gray-brown shufa still hid all but her face.
"The Karakarn will catch a chill," she murmured.
He doubted it. The Aiel might find this heat nothing out of the ordinary, but already sweat streamed down him nearly as hard as while working the sword. Still, he pulled the shirt over his head and tucked it in, though leaving the laces undone, then shrugged into the coat. He did not think Samara would actually try to put the clothes on him, not in front of the others, but this way he would avoid lectures from her and Anila, and very likely some of the others, along with the herb tea. To most Aiel, he was the Karakarn, and so it was with the maidens. In public. Alone with these women, who had chosen to reject marriage and the hearth in favor of the spear, matters became more complicated. He supposed he could stop it, maybe, but he owed it to them not to. Some had already died for him, and more would. He had promised the light burn him for it. And if he could let them do that, he could let them do the rest. Sweat soaked through the shirt immediately and began making dark patches on the coat.
"You need the Aes Sedai, Althor."
Rand hoped Bashir was half this dogged when it came to fighting. That was the man's reputation, but he had only reputation and a few weeks to go by.
"You can't afford to have them against you, and if they don't at least think you have a few strings tied to you, they might go that way. Aes Sedai are tricksome. No man can know what they'll do, or why."
"What if I tell you there are hundreds of Aes Sedai ready to support me?"
Rand was aware of the Andrans listening. He had to be careful not to say too much. Not that he knew much. What he did know was probably exaggeration and hope. He certainly doubted the hundreds, whatever Egwene hinted. Bashir's eyes narrowed.
"If there's been an embassy from the tower, I would know, so..."
His voice dropped to a near whisper.
"The split? The tower has really split?"
He sounded as if he could not believe the words coming out of his own mouth. Everyone knew Swan Sanche had been deposed from the Amarlan seat, and stilled, and executed, so rumor ran. Yet to most people, a division in the tower was only conjecture, and few truly believed. The White Tower had remained whole, a monolith towering over thrones, for 3,000 years. But the Saldaean was a man who considered all possibilities. He went on in a true whisper, stepping close so the Andrans could not overhear.
"It must be the rebels ready to support you. You could strike a better deal with them. They'll need you as much as you need them, maybe more. But rebels, even Aes Sedai rebels, won't carry nearly the weight of the White Tower, certainly not with any crown. Commoners might not know the difference, but kings and queens will."
"They're still Aes Sedai," Rand said just as quietly, "whoever they are." "And wherever they are," he thought dryly. "Aes Sedai, servants of all. The hall of the servants is broken. Broken forever. Broken, Ilyena, my love."
Ruthlessly, he quashed Luz Theron's thoughts. Sometimes they had actually been a help, giving him information he needed, but they were growing too strong. If he did have an Aes Sedai there, a yellow, they knew the most of healing, perhaps she... There had been one Aes Sedai he trusted, though not until shortly before her death, and Moraine had left him a piece of advice about Aes Sedai, about every other woman who wore the shawl and the ring.
"I'll never trust any Aes Sedai," he rasped softly. "I will use them because I do need them. But tower or rebel, I know they'll try to use me, because that is what Aes Sedai do. I'll never trust them, Bashir."
The Saldaean nodded slowly.
"Then use them if you can. But remember this. No one resists for long going the way the Aes Sedai want."
Abruptly, he barked a short laugh.
"Arthur Hawkwing was the last, so far as I know. The light burned my eyes. Maybe you'll be the second."
The scrape of boots announced an arrival in the courtyard, One of Bashir's men, a heavy-shouldered, hatchet-nosed young fellow, a head taller than his general, with a luxuriant black beard as well as thick mustaches. He walked like a man more used to a saddle under him than his own feet, but he handled the sword at his hip smoothly as he bowed. To Bashir, more than to Rand. Bashir might follow the Dragon Reborn, but Tumad, Rand thought that was his name, Tumad Azkan, followed Bashir. And Nyla and three other maidens fastened their eyes on the new Saldaean. They did not really trust any wetlander around the Kar-Karn.
"There is a man has presented himself at the gates," Tumad said uneasily. "He says, it is Mazrim Taim, my lord Bashir."
Chapter 2. A New Arrival. Mazrim Taim. Before Rand, other men through the centuries had claimed to be the Dragon Reborn. The last few years before Rand had seen a plague of false dragons, some of whom could actually channel. Mazrim Taim was one of those, raising an army and ravaging Saldaea before he was taken. Bashir's face did not change, but he gripped his sword hilt, white-knuckle hard, and Tumad was looking at him for orders. Taim's escape on the way to Tar Valon to be gentled was the reason Bashir had come to Andor in the first place. That was how much Saldaea feared and hated Mazrim Taim. Queen Tenobia had sent Bashir with an army to pursue the man wherever he went, however long it took, to make sure Taim never troubled Saldaea again. The maidens merely stood calmly, but that name burst among the Andrans like a torch tossed in dry grass. Aramilla was just being helped to her feet, yet her eyes rolled up in her head again. She would have gone down in a heap once more if Karind had not eased her to the paving stones. Elagar staggered back among the columns and bent over, retching loudly. The rest were all gasps and panic, pressing handkerchiefs to mouths and clutching at sword hilts. Even stolid Karind licked her lips nervously. Rand took his hand away from his coat pocket. "The amnesty," he said, and both Saldaeans gave him a long, flat look.
"What if he has not come for your amnesty?" Bashir said after a moment. "What if he still claims to be the Dragon Reborn?"
Feet shuffled among the Andorans. No one wanted to be within miles of where the One Power might be used in a duel.
"If he thinks that," Rand said firmly, "I will disabuse him."
He had the rarest sort of Angreal in his pocket, one made for men, a carving of a fat little man with a sword. However strong Taim might be, he could not stand up to that. "But if he has come for the amnesty, it is his, the same as any other." Whatever Taim had done in Saldaea, he could not afford to turn away a man who could channel, a man who would not have to be taught from the first steps. He needed such a man. He would turn away no one except one of the Forsaken, not unless he was forced to.
"Demondred and Samael, Semirag and Messana, Asmodian and—"
Rand forced Luz Theron down. He could not afford distractions now. Again Bashir paused before speaking, but finally he nodded and let go of his sword.
"Your amnesty holds, of course. But mark me, Althor, if Taim ever sets foot in Saldaea again, he will not live to leave. There are too many memories. No command I give, nor Tenobia herself, will stop it."
"I will keep him out of Saldaea." Either Taim had come here to submit to him, or else it was going to be necessary to kill him. Unconsciously, Rand touched his pocket, pressing the fat little man through the wool.
"Let's have him in here."
Tumad eyed Bashir, but Bashir's short nod came so quickly that it seemed Tumad bowed in response to the spoken command. Irritation flashed in Rand, but he said nothing, and Tumad hurried away in that slightly rolling walk. Bashir folded his arms across his chest and stood with one knee bent, a portrait of a man at his ease. Those dark-tilted eyes, fixed on the way Tumad had gone, made it a portrait of a man waiting to kill something. The scuffling of feet started again among the Andorans, hesitant half-steps away, then pulling back. Their breathing sounded as though they had run miles.
"You may leave," Rand told them.
"I, for one, will stand at your shoulder,"
Lur began, just as Neon said sharply.
"I will not run before..."
Rand cut them both off.
"Go!"
They wanted to show him they were unafraid, even if they were ready to soil themselves. They wanted to run, abandoning what dignity they had not already tossed at his feet. It was a simple choice. He was the dragon reborn, and currying favor meant obedience, and obedience in this case meant doing what they truly wanted. A flurry of extravagant bows and deep skirt-spreading curtsies, hurried murmurs of "By your leave, my lord dragon," and "As you command, my lord dragon," and they were not exactly scurrying out, but walking as quickly as they could manage without appearing to scurry. In the opposite direction from that in which Tumad had gone, no doubt they did not want to risk a chance encounter with Mazrim Taim on his way in. The waiting stretched out in the heat. It took time to bring a man through the sprawling corridors from the palace gates. But once the Andorans were gone, no one moved. Bashir kept his gaze steady on the place Taim would appear. The maidens watched everywhere, but they always did, and if they looked ready to veil themselves again in an instant, they always did that too. Except for their eyes, they could have been statues. Finally, the sound of boots echoed into the courtyard. Rand almost reached out for Saideen, then held back. The man would be able to tell he held the power as soon as he entered the court. Rand could not afford to appear afraid of him. Tumad emerged into the sunlight first, then a black-haired man of slightly above average height, whose dark face and tilted eyes, hooked nose, and high cheekbones marked him another Saldaean. Though he was clean-shaven and garbed like a once prosperous Andoran merchant lately fallen on hard times. His dark blue coat had been of fine wool trimmed in darker velvet, but wear had made the cuffs ragged. His breeches bagged at the knee, and dust coated his cracked boots. Still, he walked proudly, no mean feat, with four more of Bashir's men behind him, those almost straight, slightly serpentine blades bare, and the points inches from his ribs. The heat hardly seemed to touch him. The maiden's eyes followed his progress. Rand studied Taim as the man and his escort crossed the courtyard. At least 15 years older than himself, 35 then, or a few years more at most. Little was known and less written of men who could channel. It was a subject most decent people avoided, but Rand had learned what he could. Relatively few men actually sought it out. That was one of Rand's problems. Since the breaking, most men who channeled had the ability born in them, ready to spring out as they grew into manhood. Some managed to keep madness at bay for years before Aes Sedai found and gentled them. Others were already hopelessly mad when found, at times less than a year after first touching Saideen. Rand had clung to sanity for close to 2 years so far. Yet in front of him he had a man who must have managed it for 10 or 15. That alone was worth something. They halted a few paces before him at a gesture from Tumad. Rand opened his mouth, but before he could speak, Luz Theron rose up in a frenzy in his head.
"Samael and Dimundred hated me. Whatever honors I gave them, the more honors, the worse the hate, until they sold their souls and went over. Dimundred especially. I should have killed him. I should have killed them all. Scorch the earth to kill them all. Scorch the earth!"
Face frozen, Rand fought for his own mind.
"I am Rand Althor. Rand Althor. I never knew Samael, or Dimundred, or any of them. The light burn me, I am Rand Althor."
Like a faint echo, one more thought came from elsewhere.
"The light burn me."
It sounded like a plea. Then Luz Theron was gone, driven back into whatever shadows he lived in. Bashir took advantage of the silence.
"You say you're Mazrim Taim?"
He sounded doubtful, and Rand looked at him in confusion. Was this Taim or not? Only a madman would claim that name, if it was not his. The prisoner's mouth quirked in what might have been the beginning of a smile, and he rubbed his chin.
I shaved, Bashir.
His voice held more than a hint of mockery.
It is hot this far south, or had you not noticed? Hotter than it should be even here. Do you want proof of me? Shall I channel for you?
His dark eyes flickered to Rand, then back to Bashir, whose face was growing darker by the minute.
Perhaps not that, not now. I remember you. I had you beat at Irinjavar until those visions appeared in the sky. But everyone knows that. What does everyone not know? That you and Mazarim Taim will.
Focused on Bashir, he seemed unaware of his guards or their swords still hovering near his ribs.
I hear you hid what happened to Masar and Tachari and their wives.
The mockery was gone. He was just relating what had happened now.
They shouldn't have tried to kill me under a parley flag. I trust you found them good places as servants. All they really want to do now is serve and obey. They won't be happy otherwise. I could have killed them. They all four drew daggers.
Time, Bashir growled, hand darting for his hilt. You...
Rand stepped in front of him, seizing his wrist with the blade half-drawn. The guard's blades, Tumad's as well, were touching Taim now, very likely touching flesh, the way they were shoved against his coat. But he did not flinch.
"Did you come to see me?" Rand demanded, "or to taunt Lord Bashir? If you do it again, I'll let him kill you. My amnesty pardons what you've done, but it doesn't let you flaunt your crimes."
Taim studied Rand a moment before speaking. Despite the heat, the fellow barely sweated.
"To see you. You were the one in the vision in the sky. They say it was the Dark One himself you fought."
"Not the Dark One,"
Rand said. Bashir was not fighting him exactly, but he could feel the tension in the man's arm. If he let go, that blade would be out and through Taim in a heartbeat. Unless he used the power, or Taim did. That had to be avoided if it could be. He kept his grip on Bashir's wrist.
"He called himself Baal-Zaman, but I think he was a Shamayel. I killed him later, in the Stone of Tyr."
"I hear you've killed a number of the Forsaken. Should I call you my Lord Dragon?"
"I have heard this lot use the title."
"Do you mean to kill all the Forsaken?"
"Do you know any other way to deal with them?" Rand asked.
"They die or the world does. Unless you think they can be talked into abandoning the shadow the way they abandoned the light."
This was becoming ridiculous. Here he was, carrying on a conversation with a man who certainly had 5 sword points drawing blood beneath his coat, while he himself held on to another man who wanted to add a 6th and draw more than a trickle. At least Bashir's men were too disciplined to do more without their general's word. At least Bashir was keeping his mouth shut. Admiring Taim's coolness, Rand went on as quickly as he could without seeming to be hurried.
"Whatever your crimes are, Taim, they pale beside the Forsaken's. Have you ever tortured an entire city, made thousands of people assist in breaking each other slowly, in breaking their own loved ones?"
"Semirag did that, for no more reason than that she could, to prove she could, for the pleasure of it. Have you murdered children? Grendel did. She called it kindness, so they would not suffer after she enslaved their parents and carried them away."
He just hoped the other Saldaeans were listening half as closely as Taim. The man had actually leaned forward slightly in interest. He hoped they did not ask too many questions about where all this came from.
"Have you given people to Trollocs to eat?" "All the Forsaken did. Prisoners who would not turn always went to the Trollocs, if they weren't murdered out of hand. But Demandred captured 2 cities just because he thought the people there had slighted him before he went over to the Shadow, and every man, woman, and child went into Trolloc bellies. Messana set up schools in the territory she controlled, schools where children and young people were taught the glories of the Dark One, taught to kill their friends who didn't learn well enough or fast enough." "I could go on.
I could start from the beginning of the list and go through all 13 names, adding 100 crimes as bad to every name. Whatever you've done, it doesn't rank with that. And now you've come to accept my pardon, to walk in the light and submit to me, to battle the Dark One as hard as you ever battled anyone. The Forsaken are reeling. I mean to hunt them all down, eradicate them, and you will help me. For that, you've earned my pardon. I tell you true, you'll probably earn it 100 times over again before the last battle is done. At last he felt Bashir's arm relax, felt the man's sword sliding back into its scabbard. Rand barely stopped himself from exhaling in relief. I don't see any reason to guard him so closely now. Put up your swords. Slowly, Tumad and the others began sheathing their blades. Slowly, but they were doing it. Then Taim spoke. Submit. I had thought more of a compact between us. The other Saldaeans tensed. Bashir was still behind Rand, but Rand could feel him stiffening. The maidens did not move a muscle, except that Jelani's hand twitched toward her veil. Taim tilted his head unaware. I would be the lesser partner, of course, yet I have had years more than you to study the power. There is much I could teach you. Rage rose up in Rand till his vision filmed red. He had spoken of things he should have no knowledge of, had probably birthed a dozen rumors about himself and the Forsaken, all to make this fellow's deeds seem less dark, and the man had the audacity to speak of compacts. Luce Theron raved in his head, kill him now, kill him! For once, Rand did not bother to quell the voice. No compact, he growled, no partners. I am the Dragon Reborn Taim, me. If you have knowledge I can make use of, I will. But you will go where I say, do as I say, when I say. Without a pause, Taim slipped to one knee. I submit to the Dragon Reborn. I will serve and obey. The corners of his mouth quivered again in that almost smile as he rose. Tumad gaped at him. That fast, Rand said softly. The rage was not gone. It was white hot. If he gave way, he was not sure what he would do. Luce Theron still babbled in the shadows of his head. Kill him! Must kill him! Rand pushed Luce Theron away to a barely audible murmur. Perhaps he should not be surprised at this. Strange things happened around Taviren, especially one as strong as himself. That a man might change his mind in a moment, even if his course had been carved in stone, should be no great surprise. But the anger had him, and a strong streak of suspicion. You named yourself the Dragon Reborn, fought battles all over Saldaea, were only captured because you were knocked unconscious, and you give up this quickly? Why? Taim shrugged. What are my choices? To wander the world alone, friendless, hunted, while you rise to glory? That's supposing Bashir doesn't manage to kill me before I can leave the city, or your Aiel women don't. Even if they don't, the Aes Sedai will corner me sooner or later. I doubt the tower means to forget Mazarim Taim. Or I can follow you, and part of that glory will be mine. For the first time he looked around, at his guards, at the maidens, and shook his head as if he could not believe it. I might have been the one. How could I be sure otherwise? I can channel. I'm strong. What said I was not the Dragon Reborn? All I had to do was fulfill just one of the prophecies. Like managing to be born on the slopes of Dragonmount, Rand said coldly. That was the first prophecy to be met. Taim's mouth quirked again. It really was not a smile. It never touched his eyes. Victors write history. Had I taken the Stone of Tyr, history would have shown I was born on Dragonmount, of a woman never touched by a man, and the heavens opened up in radiance to herald my coming. The sort of thing they say about you now. But you took the stone with your Aiel, and the world hails you as the Dragon Reborn. I know better than to stand against that. You are the one.
Well, since the whole loaf won't be mine, I will settle for whatever slices fall my way. You may find honors, Taim, and you may not. If you begin to fret over them, think what happened to the others who've done what you did. Loghain, captured and gentled. Rumor says he died in the tower. A nameless fellow beheaded in Haddon Merc by the Tyrans. Another burned by the Mirandians. Burned alive, Taim. That's what the Ilianers did to Goran Rogad 4 years ago as well.
Not a fate I would embrace, Taim said levelly.
Then forget honors and remember the last battle. Everything I do is aimed at Tommen Gaiden. Everything I tell you to do will be aimed at it. You will aim at it.
Of course, Taim spread his hands. You are the Dragon Reborn. I don't doubt that.
I acknowledge it publicly. We march toward Tommen Gaiden, which the prophecies say you will win, and the histories will say that Mazarim Taim stood at your right hand.
Perhaps, Rand told him curtly.
He had lived too many prophecies to believe any of them meant exactly what they said, or even that they ensured anything. In his opinion, prophecy set the conditions that had to be met for a thing to happen. Only meeting them did not mean the thing would happen, just that it could. Some of the conditions set in the prophecies of the dragon more than implied that he had to die for any chance at victory. Thinking of that did nothing for his temper. The light send your chance doesn't come too soon. Now, what knowledge do you have that I need? Can you teach men to channel? Can you test a man to know whether he can be taught?
Unlike women, one man who could channel could not simply sense the ability in another. There was as much difference between men and women with the one power as there was between men and women. Sometimes it was a matter of hair-fine degree, sometimes stone versus silk.
Your amnesty? Some fools have actually shown up to learn how to be like you and me.
Bashir only stared at Taim contemptuously, arms folded and boots spread apart, but Tumad and the guards shifted uneasily. The maidens did not.
Rand had no idea how the maidens felt about the score of men who had answered his call. They never gave any sign. With the memory of Taim as a false dragon strong in their heads, few of the Saldaeans could hide their ill ease.
Just answer me, Taim. If you can do what I want, say so. If not...
That was the anger talking. He could not send the man away, not if every day was a struggle with him. Taim seemed to think he would, though.
I can do both, he said quickly. I have found 5 over the years, not that I was really looking, but only one had the courage to go beyond the testing.
He hesitated, then added,
He went mad after 2 years. I had to kill him before he killed me.
2 years. You've held it off a deal longer than that. How?
Worried? Taim asked softly, then shrugged. I can't help you. I don't know how. I just did. I'm sane as...
His eyes flickered toward Bashir, ignoring the other man's flat stare.
As Lord Bashir.
But Rand wondered, suddenly. Half the maidens had returned to watching the rest of the courtyard. They were not likely to focus so deeply on one possible threat that they ignored others. The possible threat was Taim, and the second half of the maidens still had their eyes fixed on him and Rand for any sign the threat was real. Any man would have to be aware of them, sudden death in their eyes, their hands. Rand was, and they wanted to protect him. And Tumad and the other guards still gripped their sword hilts, ready to draw again. If Bashir's men and the Aiel decided to kill Taim, the man would have a hard time escaping that courtyard, however he channeled, unless Rand helped him. Yet Taim paid the soldiers and the maidens no more outward attention than he did the colonnade's columns or the paving stones beneath his boots. Bravery, real or feigned, or something else? A kind of madness? After a moment of silence, Taim spoke again.
You don't trust me yet. No reason you should. Yet. In time you will. In token of that future trust, I brought you a present.
From under his worn coat he pulled a rag-wrapped bundle, a little larger than a man's two fists, together. Frowning, Rand took it, and his breath caught when he felt the heart shape inside. Hastily he pulled away multicolored rags, revealing a disc the size of his palm. A disc like that on the scarlet banner above the palace. Half white and half black, the ancient symbol of Aes Sedai, before the breaking of the world. He ran his fingers across the mated teardrops. Only 7 like this had been made of Quendiar. Seals on the Dark One's prison, seals that held the Dark One away from the world. He had 2 more, hidden away very carefully, protected very carefully. Nothing could break Quendiar, not even the One Power. The lip of a delicate cup made of heartstone could scratch steel or diamond. But 3 of the 7 had been broken. He had seen them, shattered. And he had watched Moraine carve a thin sliver from the edge of one. The seals were weakening, the light alone knew why or how. The disc in his hands had the hard slickness of Quendiar, like a blend of the finest porcelain and polished steel. But he was sure it would break if he let it fall to the stones under his feet. 3 broken, 3 in his possession. Where was the 7th? Only 4 seals stood between humankind and the Dark One. 4, if the last was still whole. Only 4 standing between humankind and the last battle. How well did they still hold, weakened as they were? Luz Theron's voice came up like thunder. Break it! Break them all! Must break them! Must break them all! Break them and strike! Must strike quickly! Must strike now! Break it! Break it! Break it! Rand shook with the effort of fighting that voice down, forcing away a mist that clung like spider webs. His muscles ached as if he wrestled with a man of flesh, a giant. Handful by handful, he stuffed the fog that was Luz Theron into the deepest crannies, the deepest shadows he could find in his mind. Abruptly, he heard the words he was muttering hoarsely. Must break it now. Break them all. Break it, break it, break it. Abruptly, he realized he had his hands over his head, holding the seal, ready to smash it to the white pavement. The only thing stopping him was Bashir, up on his toes, hands raised to grip Rand's arms.
"I don't know what that is," Bashir said quietly, "but I think maybe you should wait before deciding to break it, eh?"
Tumad and the others were no longer watching Taim. They gaped wide-eyed at Rand. Even the maidens had shifted their eyes to him, eyes full of concern. Sulin took a half-step toward the men, and Jelani's hand was outstretched toward Rand as if she did not realize it.
"No," Rand swallowed, his throat hurt. "I don't think I should."
Bashir stepped back slowly, and Rand brought the seal down just as slowly. If Rand had thought Taim unflappable, he had proof to the contrary now. Shock painted the man's face.
"Do you know what this is, Taim?" Rand demanded.
"You must, or you wouldn't have brought it to me. Where did you find it? Do you have another? Do you know where another is?"
"No," Taim said, voice unsteady.
Not with fear, precisely. More like a man who had felt a cliff unexpectedly crumbling under him and had somehow found himself back on solid ground.
"That is the only one I've heard all sorts of rumors since I escaped the Aes Sedai. Monsters leaping out of thin air. Strange beasts. Men talking to animals, and the animals talking back. Aes Sedai going mad like we're supposed to. Whole villages going mad, killing each other. Some could be true. Half what I know to be true is no less insane. I heard some of the seals have been broken. A hammer could break that one."
Bashir frowned, stared at the seal in Rand's hands, then gasped. He understood.
"Where did you find it?" Rand repeated. If he could find the last, then what?
Luz Theron stirred, but he refused to listen.
"'In the last place you would expect,'
Taim replied, "'which I suppose is the first place to look for the others.
"'A decaying little farm in Saldea.
"'I stopped for water, and the farmer gave it to me. "'He was old, with no children or grandchildren to pass it on to, "'and he thought I was the dragon reborn. "'He claimed his family had guarded it more than 2,000 years. "'Claimed they were kings and queens during the Trolloc Wars.' "'And nobles under Utter Hawkwing. "'His tale could have been true, "'no more unlikely than finding that in a hut "'only a few days' ride from the Blight border.'
"'Rand nodded, then stopped to gather up the rags. "'He was used to the unlikely happening around him. "'It had to happen elsewhere, sometimes. "'Hurriedly rewrapping the seal, he handed it to Bashir. "'Guard this carefully.
"'Break it!'
He squashed the voice hard. Nothing must happen to it. Bashir took the bundle reverently in both hands. Rand was unsure whether the man's bow was for him or the seal.
For 10 hours or 10 years it will be safe until you require it.
For a moment, Rand studied him.
Everybody's waiting for me to go mad. Afraid of it. But not you.
You must have thought I finally was just now, but you weren't afraid of me even then.
Bashir shrugged, grinning behind his gray-streaked mustaches.
When I first slept in a saddle, Muad Chida was Marshal General. The man was as mad as a hare in spring thaw. Twice every day he searched his body servant for poison, and he drank nothing but vinegar and water, which he claimed was sovereign against the poison the fellow fed him. But he ate everything the man prepared for as long as I knew him. Once he had a grove of oaks chopped down because they were looking at him, and then insisted they be given decent funerals. He gave the oration. Do you have any idea how long it takes to dig graves for 23 oak trees?
Why didn't somebody do something? His family.
Those not mad as he was, or madder, were afraid to look at him sideways. Tanobia's father wouldn't have let anyone touch Chida anyway. He might have been insane, but he could out-general anyone I ever saw. He never lost a battle. He never even came close to losing.
Rand laughed.
So you follow me because you think I can out-general the Dark One? I follow you because you are who you are, Bashir said quietly. The world must follow you. Or those who survive will wish themselves dead.
Slowly Rand nodded. The prophecies said he would break nations and bind them together. Not that he wanted to, but the prophecies were his only guide to how to fight the last battle, how to win it. Even without them, he thought the binding together was necessary. The last battle would not be just him against the Dark One. He could not believe that. If he was going mad, he was not yet mad enough to believe he was more than a man. It would be mankind against Trollocs and Murdral, too, and every sort of shadow spawn the Blight could vomit out, and dark friends rising out of their hiding places. There would be other dangers on that road to Tarmangaden, and if the world was not united...
You do what must be done.
He was not sure whether that was himself or Luz Theron, but it was the truth, as far as he could see. Walking quickly to the nearest colonnade, he spoke over his shoulder to Bashir.
"'I am taking Taim to the farm. Do you want to come along?'
"'The farm?' Taim said.
Bashir shook his head.
"'Thank you, no,' he said dryly.
He might not allow any nerves to show, but Rand and Taim together were probably as much as he could take. He certainly avoided the farm.
My men are growing soft, policing the streets for you. I mean to put some of them back into their saddles properly for a few hours. You are going to inspect them this afternoon. Has that changed?
What farm? Taim said.
Rand sighed, suddenly weary.
No, that hasn't changed. I will be there if I can.
It was too important to change, though none but Bashir and Matt knew.
He could not let anyone else think it more than a casual matter, a useless ceremony for a man growing taken with the pomp of his position, the dragon reborn going out to be cheered by his soldiers. He had another visit to make today, too, one that everyone would think he was trying to keep secret. It might even stay secret, from most, but he had no doubt that those he wanted to learn of it would. Taking up his sword from where it stood against one of the narrow columns, he buckled it on over his undone coat. The belt was unadorned dark boar hide, just like the scabbard and the long hilt. The buckle was ornate, a finely worked dragon of etched steel inlaid with gold. He should get rid of that buckle, find something plain. He could not bring himself to do it, though. It had been a gift from Avienda, which was the reason he should rid himself of it. He could never think his way out of that circle.